Don't be fooled by the intro music, folks. It's Battle of Spears Broadsides, March 15, 2001. 2 hours of civil rights in Santa Cruz coming at you. California at 96.3 FM for the next 2 hours. As soon as I catch my breath, hang with me and let's do some civil rights talking and maybe some walking. That would be even better than talking, wouldn't it? We're going to have special guests tonight, Veronica and Kiko, who spoke at City Council on Tuesday night at the Oral Communications Section, 7 o'clock. Some of you who are regulars may have listened to that show. Others who don't want to waste your time with City Council, and I can quite sympathize with that, may have missed it. There were a number of people who spoke about police misconduct. They weren't organized. They weren't orchestrated. They weren't dragged in by me or anybody else. They just happened to show up. And I guess we're going to pursue that subject even further on Sunday when the show returns. We do two shows a week, for those of you who are new. One is Sunday from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon. The other is on Thursdays today, and every Thursday, 6 to 8 in the evening here on 96.3. Our call-in number, in case you want to reach us, and we do encourage you to call in, 427-3772, 427-3772, easy number to remember, and we'll keep trying to put it out there in case you don't remember it. If you want to reach us off-air, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is the headquarters for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Huff, but it's also where the producer of this show is sitting fielding calls in case you want to talk about stuff off air that you're a little bit uncomfortable talking about on the air, or you want to first kind of set the scene, or possibly you have some messages you want to pass on without being public at this particular point about them. So, before we get into our guests who are here, we may even get another guest coming up. There's another speaker from the city council meeting of last Tuesday who was concerned about police misconduct who may show up. But we at least have two folks who I think I'm really glad to see here, Kiko and Veronica. Before I introduce them, though, I'm going to play a little bit of an interview that happened this... Well, the interview happened just an hour ago, but the incident that provoked it was the, shall we say, the demolition of the statue of Christopher Columbus over in San Jose. I think that was on Thursday. A man who's admitted demolishing it, Jim Costner, local activist, went to court this morning, and he's now being defended by attorney Larry Hildes. And we had an interview with Larry. We're going to play that interview now, and then we're going to launch into live on-air discussion of police conduct in Santa Cruz. We're going to have two folks discussing their concerns about that. But first, a little bit about Jim Costner, who is currently in jail on $50,000 bail over in San Jose.
Hi, it is March 15th, about 5:10 in the afternoon, on the line with attorney Larry Hildes, also activist Larry Hildes. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Robert.
And you came all the way down from Berkeley to San Jose today to help a man named Jim Costner. Who's Jim and what's happening?
Well, Jim was arrested. Jim is a longtime activist in Santa Cruz on a variety of issues, Indian rights issues, homeless issues, and so on. Was arrested last Thursday. He decided to do some redecorating to a statue of Columbus. He was offended that there was a statue of Columbus at San Jose City Hall, such a public building, and took a sledgehammer to it and did quite significant damage. Frankly, a couple more blows and it looks like he would have knocked the head off, along with the legs and one arm and part of a hand.
But the spirit of Columbus lives on.
Yes.
Wasn't Columbus this famous conquistador who wiped out, 1 to 3 million, he and his, I guess, his son, and I guess the man after him, in the course of 60 or 70 years, the entire population of Hispaniola was eliminated?
That is correct. Great hero.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good if you need a depopulation expert, call in Christopher. I mean, they didn't have the atomic bomb in those days.
It's amazingly efficient for the Spanish were quite, who sent him, were quite good at genocide by that point.
Oh, and so he also, I understand, exported Native American slaves back to Europe. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And this is exactly the kind of thing we want to talk about. Apparently, they have his bail at $50,000, which is basically murder and serial rapist bail. And the DA was arguing today that it should be higher. She said that they were getting a great deal of pressure from concerned citizens who were offended by what he had done and claiming that he had done $150,000 worth of damage to the statue. Frankly, I don't think the statue was worth $150,000.
Uh-huh. Well, I understand. I read somewhere, I guess it was the Mercury News, that they're going to try to redo the statue or patch it up and move it somewhere else.
That is apparently the plan.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I went in this morning in front of Judge Stafford to try and get the bail reduced down to a reasonable level so we could get Jim out. And I announced my purpose, and the judge responded by saying, I set the bail. It's what I think it should be.
And did he give any explanation for this? I mean,
no.
Did you have cases in point to indicate that? I guess he's charged with felony vandalism and felony second-degree burglary. Are those the two charges?
That is correct. And the felony vandalism, ironically, is with a hate crime enhancement. I want to know who this group is, who this oppressed group is, who he's supposed to be directing hate to.
Well, maybe war criminals and the genocidal murderers are in a sense, an endangered group, and he is attacking the, a particular group of much maligned individuals. Although Columbus is, I guess, occasionally maligned, but usually he's revered, right?
Which is one of those bizarre things. The victors get to make the history.
Now, was this some sort of sinister... are they alleging this was a sinister conspiracy where...
No.
He was slipped a sledgehammer and, he was... What's the...
Basically, they are saying that he's crazy and therefore dangerous.
Would they claim that he's a psychiatric case, or that he's crazy but cold-blooded? And
right, all of that. Apparently, he gave an interview to the police, which they videotaped, which we have not seen yet, and which, frankly, I had kept his mouth shut, and talked a lot about God and genocide, and they decided, because he believed so strongly in this, that he must be crazy.
Hmm.
After all, Columbus was a hero, wasn't he? Anybody who would sledgehammer a statue of Columbus must be crazy.
Well, he is one of our conquistador heroes, if you want to consider. I guess if you want to consider the Nazi pantheon, the Führer himself would be considered quite a hero.
Yes.
Within his own circle, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And we're going to try and narrow the circle. There's no. We're not going to argue that Jim didn't do it. He did it. He's proud of having done it. We're not going to argue. We're not going to argue. We can't really argue necessity because Columbus is dead. Basically, what we're going to do is put Columbus on trial. And we're going to try and explain to a jury how offensive this is.
You think the judge, is your trial judge going to be the judge that sets the bail?
No, he's gone. I told him I was going to remove him from the case, and he said, I'm not going to hear it anymore anyway.
Uh-huh.
So he's gone.
So is there a chance of getting a new bail hearing before a new judge?
Monday. Monday at 1:30, we have a bail hearing. We're going to have a press conference at 1 o'clock. I dictated about half the press release to the support person. We need a packed courtroom. Anybody who can get over the hill, we need people there.
This is Monday at what time?
1:30. We don't know what the department, Monday the 19th at 1:30, we don't know what the department will be. We will be meeting out front at 1 o'clock. We'll go into Department 23, which is in the basement of the new building, and they will send us somewhere else.
And this is in San Jose. I guess I would encourage people, if you want instructions on how to get to this San Jose courthouse, give a call to HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Larry, what penalties does Jim Costner face?
Well, he cannot be sentenced for both the burglary and the vandalism, because the vandalism is an element of the burglary. He can only be sentenced for one or the other, but potentially 3 years in prison.
And
they could try to make him pay the cost of the stupid statue.
Uh-huh. Is there much public sentiment you've talked to? I mean, do people sort of snarl and spit at you as you walk down the street, Larry, once they've learned you're taking this case? Or they shake your hand, congratulate you? I've had several people who I didn't know, really, who didn't know Jim Costner, look at this press release and say, right on, Jim. What's the reaction you've been hearing?
Well, I haven't gotten much yet. This is the first time I've appeared in the case. I will be in the Mercury News tomorrow, as presumably will Jim. They had a reporter there. I did go over to the scene of the crime.
So you say you went to the scene of the crime to catch the debris of the Columbus statue, and what did you see?
Well, there were a couple of bunches of flowers there, but I also stood there for a while and tried to hear what people were saying. Didn't hear much. A lot of people just didn't understand it or thought it was really funny. There were a couple of people who were just mortally offended.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think most people understood it. And that's going to be our job over the course of the time between now and the trial, and then during the trial, is to make people understand exactly why he did it and why it was appropriate.
How can people help, Jim? You suggested they show up at 1:30 on Monday. I guess it's the, looks like the 18th?
19th.
Thank you.
Yes. That would be a very big help. Money is always helpful, especially if we're trying to get him out. If they don't reduce his bail, we have to get him out of there. It makes the whole case more difficult, and it makes his situation much more dangerous if he's in there. He's identified white supremacists in the area with him, and it would just be better all around to get him.
You mean by that white supremacists who might do him some danger?
That would be my concern, yeah.
Uh-huh.
He's in very good spirits, but he would be in a lot better spirits if we had him out. There's always, money for logistical stuff related to the suit. We're going to need witnesses. We're going to need experts who can talk about Columbus and about genocide of Native Americans. A lot of stuff like that we're going to need. The biggest thing we need initially is people to show up, though. We want to fill the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
We want it to be clear to whatever judge hears this case on Monday that he has support, because they have made it clear, both the judge and the DA made it very clear that they are getting a lot of pressure from the Italian-American groups that put the statue up, demanding that he basically be hung.
Hmm.
And they keep demanding his bail be higher. The DA's office was threatening to demand $100,000 bail.
I see. Hang him high, hang him higher, eh?
Yes.
So, I guess, where can people send money?
I guess they can send it to, much as I always hate to do this, they can send it to my office. I don't know what the support, what the local contact information for him is at this point.
Well, why don't we give your office and hope that you will not be filching his checks?
I am honor-bound not to do that. My office address is 1840 Woolsey Street, W-O-O-L-S-E-Y, in Berkeley, 94703. Either make the checks out to him or make them out to me and notate in the note box for Jim Costner.
C-O-S-N-E-R?
C-O-S-N-E-R, and they will go to his case. They will not go to anything else.
And if any local support persons for the Costner Defense Fund are listening...
They are saying that he's crazy and therefore dangerous.
Or they claim that he's a psychiatric case or that he's crazy but cold-blooded and...
Right, all of that. Apparently, he gave an interview to the police, which they videotaped, which we have not seen yet, and which, frankly, I had kept his mouth shut. In the note box for Jim Costner...
C-O-S-N-E-R.
C-O-S-N-E-R, and they will go to his case. They will not go to anything else.
And if any local support persons for the Costner Defense Fund are listening in, and you have a more local number and
that
address,
would be great.
Please call in and let us know. It's call-in number here at Free Radio is 427-3772. We're talking and have been talking to Larry Hildes, Berkeley attorney for Jim Costner, who... brought down the celebrated Christopher Columbus with a number of blows to the thigh and buttocks, apparently, the statue at the
Santa... Knocked off both legs.
Knocked off both legs.
One hand.
And I think that covers the gist of it. We got a little garbled on the tape there towards the end. My apologies, folks. It's we have a crowded studio and new equipment and a... completely incompetent broadcaster, but aside from that, we're doing just great. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. If you want more information about the Costner case, and again, that attorney Larry Hildes is urging people to pack the courtroom on 1:30 Monday in the San Jose courthouse, you want to give a call to 423-HUFF, and we will give you the more specific address, directions to get there, or hopefully direct you in the direction to go so you can get those directions. If you have any thoughts on this subject, Columbus statue smashing, a fit subject for support by Santa Cruz activists, feel free to give a call. I'm of the mind myself, it's not anything I would recommend for me, you, or anybody else, frankly, but I would understand when it was done, why it was done, given the fact that Columbus is indeed, as the press release that I'm looking at here says, a celebrated mass murderer. And I'm going to read the first four paragraphs of this press release because I think it gives out some interesting and accurate information. Wielding a sledgehammer, justice activist James Costner smashed a life-size statue of Christopher Columbus in front of dozens of witnesses at City Hall in San Jose, California, on Thursday, March 8th. As the seven types of marble chips flew from the blows, Costner shouted, "Genocide! This man rode our backs! This man murdered us." And it's actually true that the Spaniards actually saddled and rode Arawak Indians. I mean, it's not some sort of metaphor. It's actually a literal statement according to accounts of the time. "Most Americans do not know the murderous history of Christopher Columbus. Examining primary historical sources by Bartolomeu de las Casas, the biographer of Columbus's son, Columbus made four voyages to the New World. He encountered the Arawaks, who occupied Haiti, or Hispaniola, if you look at the whole island. An early estimate of the Arawak was 1.1 million, not counting children. According to conservative estimate, over 3 million Arawaks lived on Haiti in pre-Columbian times, if you count the estimates rather than simply the smaller census. Columbus kidnapped, enslaved, and murdered the Arawak people. He ruled with severe discipline, ordering the cutting off of ears or nose as punishment for minor crimes. When the Arawaks fought back, Columbus used the excuse to wage war. On March 24, 1495, Columbus set out to conquer the Arawaks with 20 hunting dogs, horses, and guns. Columbus set upon the Arawaks, tearing them up with dogs and mowing them down with volleys of bullets and running them over with horses. Reporting back to Queen Isabella of Spain, Columbus boasted, "In the name of the Holy Trinity, we can send from here all the slaves that Brazil will hold." And in fact, the slave trade didn't begin going from Africa to America. It started going from Hispaniola back to Europe and to other parts of America via Columbus and his fellow conquistadors on Hispaniola. The Spaniards hunted Indians for sport and murdered them for dog food. Seeking gold, he enslaved the remaining Arawaks to work the mines. Those who refused had their hands cut off. What they would do is they would put a kind of a medallion around people's necks, and if you didn't have your medallion, then you were vulnerable to having your hands cut off. That was the way they dealt with it, according to the historians I've read. Conditions for the Arawak became so intolerable that as many as 100 at a time would commit suicide. Women were known to kill their newborn babies rather than have them raised in such hideous circumstances. Columbus would reward his officers with women to rape, girls 10 to 12, who were especially desired for rape. When Columbus' son took over in 1505, he continued the slaughter. Only some 12,000 remained by 1516. By 1555, not a single Arawak remained. Haiti remains one of the primary instances of genocide in human history, to be followed by more instances of genocide in Puerto Rico and Cuba. The presence of the statue prominently placed in City Hall in San Jose has been reviled by Native Americans as a sick reminder of the ruthless slaughter and conquest of indigenous people in the New World. And there's more to this press release. Sources for historical information on Columbus's genocidal policies: History of the Indies by Bartolomé de las Casas, Select Letters of Christopher Columbus, translated and edited by R.H. Major, People's History of the United States, Howard Zinn, Log of Christopher Columbus's First Voyage to America in the year 1492, as copied out in brief by Las Casas. And all these come from the book Lies My Teacher Told Me, Everything Your American History Textbook Got Wrong, by James W. Lowen. I think I actually read most of this in the last broadcast. But, hey, it's worth considering. Indeed, it's vandalism to destroy a statue, but perhaps it's a form of creative and positive vandalism when you destroy a statue of a mass murderer, because what kind of an example is that setting for our society, our children, those in our future? But you can comment on this, or you can comment on whatever else you'd like to comment on around civil rights issues here at Free Radio. I see the lines are beginning to light up, or the line is lighting up since we have only one line in. 427-3772 is our number.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert Merlin.
Hey, Merlin.
That person thinks Gonzo's a hero.
Say, you think Jim's a hero?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All about this, what Christopher Columbus did? You know, no offense to the Italian people that built this statue and paid for the money to have it built and all that stuff.
I think Christopher Columbus is an offense to the Italian people himself.
I think he's a disgrace to the Italian people and the American people, not to mention a degradation to the Indian people.
Yeah, well, it's more like, you know, there were these times for adventurous types who would, you know, get involved in activities of this sort, but I don't think you want to, you know, celebrate them. I mean, I know that it's traditional because that's what American history books have done, but, hey...
I think you ought to lose Columbus Day as a holiday.
I tend to agree with you. I usually call it Indigenous People's Slaughter Day. That's what I usually call it.
You know, I'm happy to see this thing done. I'm sorry to see Jim did it, because I'm a good friend of his. Sorry to see him do it, man.
Yeah, because...
I'm sorry to see him in jail. I wish Jim wouldn't have done it. I wish somebody else would have done it.
Right.
You know, but I hope all the Indian people back him up over there over the hill in Santa Cruz.
I hear you. Well, thank you. I'm going to roll on to our guests now and see what they think about all this. Anything else you want to say?
No, that's about it.
All right.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
And, hey, that, well, I mean, it's, you can't get an argument from me, caller, on that one. I'd like to present, however, kind of move on to the next segment of the show, but we aren't precluding any discussion of this Columbus stuff. We have in the studio with us... a couple that have experienced some rather interesting contacts with the police department and talked about it on Tuesday night in the evening session of City Council. We have Kiko and Veronica. And I guess, Kiko, you're going to sort of launch off this discussion. How are you doing tonight?
All right.
And what... What happened? Give us a pretend that no one here was at city council. No one heard what you said to the city council, and give it to us again.
Well, me and two friends who are in from Philly with a rap group called War Club, they were out here doing some shows at the Week of Dragons, the Week for Political Prisoners up in Oakland, and they were down here performing a show up at UCSC. So we were taking a friend home back to his grandma's house so we could be there for work in the morning, but we didn't have no way of transportation, so we asked Veronica if we could use her car, and she was dead sick, so she couldn't even drive. She'd been throwing up all day, so she let us use her car and go up there. He lives on Bay Street, and we're on Blackburn, so it was just a trip up the hill. And on our way back down, after dropping our friend off, the police started following us, and we noticed that they were following us. So we were going up to a friend's house to get Veronica some medicine, and it was up by the old people's home up by what's that street called? Pacific. And so we stopped, we parked, and then all of a sudden we were getting out of the car, and the police rolled up on us because we had lost sight of them for a little bit after they had been following us.
Now, was this one squad car,
yeah,
Kiko? And how many police were involved in this?
It was two.
What happened?
So then we were rolling out the car, and then all of a sudden they shined their light on us and told us to get back in. And so when they came over, we asked them what was going on. They wouldn't say nothing. They just kept asking. They asked the driver for his license and the registration for the vehicle and all that. So after that, we were just waiting there asking them what was going on, and they wouldn't tell us. Finally, they said that one of our taillights was out. So we were like, what? Because we knew no taillight was out. So then after we got out the car, because they said they were going to repo the car and that we had to just grab whatever we had in our immediate possession. And
let me interrupt you for a moment. How do you know your taillights weren't out? Did you get out and check them? Or?
Yeah, because when we got out, we got all our stuff and we were getting ready to leave. We said, let's check the taillight. And then they went in there and turned the key on, and the taillight wasn't out. There was one brake bulb of the brake light that was out, but even with one brake bulb, the brake light still lights up.
And what did they say when, you know, you brought that to their attention?
They didn't say nothing. They said the one bulb's out, and you don't have a license. It doesn't matter. The car's getting taken.
So the driver didn't have a license?
Yeah.
Did someone else in the vehicle have a license?
No, none of us had a license. We were just going to drop a friend off a couple blocks away. And so when we got out, we seen that, and my friend, he got his ticket given to him, and so the reason we got pulled over was for driving in 20 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. And we never got pulled over, though. So if we were driving 20 miles an hour, they would have pulled us over while we were doing it.
Let me ask you this. What skin color were these officers?
White.
And what color are you?
Red.
And what color is... what color are you, Veronica?
Yellow-brown.
this is all very colorful, but let me ask you, what's your ancestry? You're Cambodian, Veronica, and you, Kiko, are...
An Arawak Indian.
And you actually are, should we say, you're an Arawak Indian? No way. You mean you were one of the survivors who got... What, did you swim away? What happened? So they were lying to us in this textbook. Somebody got away. I better call Columbus's great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson here.
Yeah.
Perhaps I better not.
I was going to mention that after we got done with this, that don't believe the hype. We're still here and alive after 500 years.
Well, I mean, actually, I'm glad to hear that. When did all this happen? What was the date of this?
This was February 14th on Valentine's Day.
And what time of day or night did this go on?
It was like 2:30 in the morning. What time was it? One in the morning.
About 1 in the morning. And were there any witnesses? Anybody come out of their houses? Or was this in a residential area?
This was like halfway down to the hill up by a car dealership. And but on the top of the hill, there's the old people's home. So there was cars parked the whole way, and there's meters right there. So we parked right in front of one of the meters, and that's where it all happened. Nobody was there to see
now
nothing.
Were you pulled over, or did you just park?
No, we had parked, and then they came up on us after the keys were out of the ignition, and the two people in the front were out of the car, had their bodies out of the car, and
so
I was on my way out.
The police had not put on their sirens or their blinking red light?
No, they just shined a light on us.
And yet they claimed that they had the right to move your vehicle and to tow it because there was no registered or licensed driver there?
Yeah, because there was no licensed driver. But the thing is, they could have never known that if they didn't shine the light on us, because we were already parked.
And did they end up towing the vehicle?
Yeah, they towed the vehicle.
And where is the vehicle now?
we got the vehicle back after we went to the police chief, and
police chief Steve Belcher.
We went to the police chief afterwards, but we got the car back. We talked to Sergeant McMahon in Internal Affairs, and I had my parents. But we should probably finish the story because this wouldn't make sense.
Finish the story first.
So then we got we went and got Veronica because we didn't know we knew what was going on. But this was like out of the blue. We were just like two blocks away from her house. We were just dropping a friend off, and we're gonna get something at a friend's house, and then that was it. Yeah, it was like no big deal because she was sick all day. So all we had to do was pigs pulled us over. We already were just chilling, parked. And so once the car got taken away, we went and got Veronica to see if, because she was the owner of the vehicle, she'd get it back, because we knew the towing company would get there quick, because it's 1 in the morning. So when we got back, the towing company just barely got there, and that's when she started to talk to the officer. I guess she could tell you about that.
Yeah, pick it up from there, Veronica. You were ill, right? You weren't in the best shape out there, right? And this was 2:30 in the morning?
Yeah. Yeah, so I got out there, and I tried to explain the whole situation to them. I offered them my ID, my registration, my insurance, and everything, and I tried to explain to them that the car is actually registered under my mother's name, and we have different last names because she's remarried, and I tried to explain the whole thing to them, and they didn't even look at my ID, and in any case, although our last names are different, everything else would have matched up, our addresses, our policy numbers, and everything. It would have been really obvious that I was a legal driver of the car, and I have a license, and there is a law that says that, someone caught without a license will have the vehicle towed, but if the registered owner is not present. But I am the registered owner, and I do have a license, and I'm a legal driver of the car, so there was no reason for the car to be towed. And so we tried to reason with her. I tried to reason with her numerous times calmly, and she was unwilling to listen. So I asked her if I could get my books out of the trunk because I had school the next day. I go to school at the university, and She said no, that I couldn't touch my car, and I said that was fine, that she could get it out for me, and she refused to, and I said, okay, well, can you at least turn my headlights off? Because the car was being towed, it was already on the thing, it didn't need to be driven anywhere, there was no reason for the lights to be on, and I told her if you didn't turn the lights off, the batteries would die, and she said she refused to, and I said, well, can you please roll my windows up, because my windows were completely rolled down, and it had been raining, if you will remember, that whole week, so if it had rained, my car would have been drenched, and I asked her very calmly and politely, and it wasn't like she told me I couldn't touch the car. I said, that's fine, can you please do it for me, and she refused to, so
I interrupt you for a moment. Who was the officer you were, who was this woman?
She was, the officer's name were Benny and Klein, badge 181 and 189. And I don't know which one she is, but she was either Benny or Klein.
They were both female officers?
No, it was a woman and a man.
Uh-huh. So one was Officer Benny and one was Officer Benny and one was Officer Klein?
Right.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. So you said that you attempted to get her to roll up the windows because it was likely to rain or had rained, and what happened then?
And she said no. So I reached for the car door to do it myself, and she got up on me, and I said, don't touch me. And she got up on me again, and I pushed her up, and I said, don't touch me. And the two men who were with me said, get your hands off her, and she reached for her gun. And she called, like, 4 or 5 backup cars. Do you remember how many?
Total, like, once they got there, there was, like, 6, 7 cars there, just for nothing, for 3 people.
And what about her fellow officer? Was one of the officers more hot dog than the other, so to speak?
The woman was. The other officer, he was playing, like, a little bitch in the back.
Meaning
he was just, like, he was scared. He was scared of us, and he had the gun. Like we were going to do something, but we were sitting there calm the whole time. He was just scared of the whole situation.
And again, how many of you were there?
At that time, there was 3, because we went and got her, and then one of the guys stayed. So it was just like 2, 3 of us that went back.
So there were 3 men and one
no,
woman?
No, 2 men and 1 woman.
2 men and 1 woman, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, so then, let me follow this exactly. So you trying to close your window, Veronica, were told not to do so by the officer. Actually, did she physically, this was the woman who physically sort of interposed herself, or?
Yeah, she physically got in my way and kind of grabbed me, like, by my upper torso.
Uh-huh.
Like my arm.
Was she bigger
shoulders.
Than you, or shorter, taller than you?
She's maybe a little bit taller than me.
She's way bigger.
Oh, she was, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Well,
she
didn't seem
bigger than
that big
you.
To me.
And what did she say to you as you were doing this? Or did you remember what she said? Did she say anything?
She didn't say anything. I don't remember her saying anything. She just pushed, she just got up on me.
And so then the two men rose to your defense?
No. They were actually, like, really far from me, maybe 7 to 8 feet mm-hmm. at least, and all they said was, get your hands off her. I mean, I was handling myself fine.
Defense.
I just pushed her off me twice, and all they said was, get your hands off her.
So she then pulled her gun?
No.
She reached for it.
I backed
up as soon as I saw that, so she didn't actually pull it.
She made a motion toward her gun. She didn't actually... Did she touch her gun?
Yeah, she was ready to pull it, and I stepped back.
And then what happened?
And then so at that point, I mean, we were all unarmed, and they had been frisked already, too, when they were first stopped by the cars. I mean, by the cops, so...
By the two officers initially?
Right, so it was already known that nobody was armed or anything, and, you know, I mean, we were completely outnumbered with 7 police cars
there. Before the... How long did it take seven police cars, you say? You counted
right,
7 cars? Or?
Didn't you say 5?
It was, like, between 5 and 7.
Between 5 and 7, I don't remember exactly.
Uh-huh. So there were at least 5 police cars? Is that accurate?
Right, because they called backup, so they weren't all there at the same time.
So the woman, let me get the sequence. The female officer called, said she, what did she say exactly? Get me backup or something like that?
She just, like, put some kind of code into her little mic thing, and then all of a sudden, like the things were just winding down. The car was getting towed away. Then all of a sudden, like, 5 cars show up. And
how quickly
just
did it
up.
Take those cars to arrive?
Oh, we were, like, more than the block away from the station, so it wasn't, like, even one minute.
The Santa Cruz Police Station.
Yeah.
Station.
Yeah.
Okay. So the cars arrived. Did they block the street?
Well, they just came in like on all angles. It was like it's just like a one way street.
Okay. And how many police officers would you estimate were there?
Well, there was like one in a car, like
so about
between five
to 7 police officers.
Yeah, 4 or 5 more cars showed up.
4 or 5 more cars.
Yeah.
So 4 to 5 more police officers showed up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what did these police officers do?
They just came out and just would like. Just all of them got out of the cars, like walking around, like I don't know, just kind of lollygagging, like assessing the situation type.
Did anyone pull a gun?
No.
Well, we pretty much left once they got there too. We didn't stay long.
Yeah, because the car was being towed. The car was like the tow truck was gone, and so it was like we were there with like 6 cop cars. We weren't even trying to stay around.
So soon after these cops, the last police officers pulled up, you took off.
Yeah, we just seen them all come in, and we were like, what the fuck is this? We were like, we're gone.
Now, did they try to stop you, or did they try to speak to you?
No. They were, I don't know. Do you
yeah, they didn't care who I was. They didn't even want to know whose car it was. I mean, they wouldn't have known who to give the car back to. You know, they were completely uninterested in who we are. They just took our car.
Did you ask for the names and badge numbers of the police officers who stopped you?
Yeah.
And did they that's give them to you?
Yeah, that's how we got them.
And did you get any explanation as to why they were taking your vehicle, even though you were the registered, or your mother was the registered owner, is
right.
that right? Why did they say because you weren't the registered owner, that was why they were taking the vehicle? Or?
No, they said that the information was completely irrelevant. They wouldn't even listen. They wouldn't look at my ID, insurance, or anything.
They wouldn't have known she was the registered owner or not, because they didn't give her the time of day.
Why do you feel they took this attitude? Do you think it had to do with an attitude of racial prejudice? Had they been drinking? Did they get up on the wrong side of bed?
Well, I mean, the whole thing is racial prejudice. The whole police force is racial prejudice. But, I mean, so that's the whole reason they pulled us over. So from the get, I mean, it was done on racial prejudice.
And even the ticket that they gave to the driver, he gave them his ID so that they could write the ticket. And if you look on his ID, it says, on the ticket, under race, it says black. And then on his ID, it says Indian, Native American Indian. And so it's obvious all they saw was a black man in a car that was turned off. Mm-hmm. And so they towed his car.
Then this case had further consequences. What happened in the days ahead? In the days that followed, I should say.
Well, the next morning we called internal affairs or something like that. We ended up speaking to Sergeant McMahon. We called different departments of the police, and I had my parents fax in a letter to the police station explaining that I was a legal driver of the car and that I am their daughter, and to release the car to me. And so after talking to hundreds and hundreds of people, we were able to get a trial in 3 days, and we had to pay $85 for the trial, and then $130 just for them to even decide whether to release the car or not.
Hundreds and hundreds of people, or maybe 5 or 10 people?
Maybe 5.
Maybe 5 people. It felt like hundreds and hundreds of people.
I was being, yeah.
Right. I mean,
exaggerating.
And so you had to pay $85 to get your car back. What, were you found guilty of anything at this trial? Were you yourself accused?
No. They wouldn't let me talk about anything that happened. The officer who did my hearing, all he wanted to talk about was whether I was really the owner of the car, if I was a legal registered driver of the car. Mm-hmm.
Was
that
registered driver or registered owner? Or both.
Or legal registered. Yeah, both. Basically, if I was a legal driver of the car, if it could be released to me, because I'm not actually the registered owner, my parents are.
So he determined that you were and it could be released to you?
Yeah.
But what about the fine? What about the cost?
He didn't even want to talk about it at all. I couldn't talk about anything. I did, but he wasn't listening.
Have you filed a claim with the city for the money that you lost in this incident?
Yes.
And have you talked to an attorney yet?
No, but I did get a number of one today.
You brought this case to city council. You got your car back, what, after you didn't have it for 3 days. What did you do during that three-day period? Walk, hitchhike, take the bus, rent a car? What happened?
Yeah, I bussed. I mean, I was real ill, too, so it was...
Quite a hardship?
Yeah. I mean, it's not really... 3 days without a car isn't that bad, but I'm just saying that that's not the point, really. The point is that it was a case of racial profiling. We were, you know, unjustly harassed by the police and had to pay $440 to be fucked with, basically.
Did you file a complaint with our Puffaroonie Police Pal Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or they call themselves the CPRB, the Citizens Police Review Board?
No, because we heard basically they have no power.
Although it's often good to do that, even though they don't have power, simply to make a record of what's happening, and I can show you how to do that afterward if you'd like, if you're up for that. This happened on the 14th, and you came to City Council, I guess it was 2 days ago, on March, what, 12th? It took a while for you to decide to go to City Council. Why did you decide to go and speak at City Council?
Well, we had been trying to get our money back. I'd spoke with... Charles McMahon, the police chief, the mayor, the vice mayor, and another city council member.
Christopher Crone, Ed
Porter. I actually called all of them, and I spoke with a few of them. Chris Crone returned a phone call, but I never spoke with him. I spoke with Pat.
And what did the mayor, Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, say to you?
He was kind of like, oh, racial profiling, that's bad. But we went in there, both of us went in there requesting that if he would meet with us and the police chief to discuss the whole thing. And
did he agree to do that?
No.
What did he say to you when you requested that?
He said, oh, well, I'll try and call him and I'll have to look at the police report. And all he really ended up doing was having the police chief call me.
And that was Police Chief Steve Belcher?
Yep.
And how long after this whole incident did Belcher call you?
Just a few days. It might have been even the next day after he spoke with Tim, though. That wasn't after the incident.
Okay, and how quickly did Tim move on this to get the... Did he initiate the police chief's calling you, or did your...
Yeah, he did. He's the one who gave him my number.
And what... you didn't call the police chief directly yourself?
I had been trying to get a hold of him, but I wasn't able to, so...
But did you leave a message with the police department that you were looking for him?
Yeah.
So he might have called... But do you think he called because... Did he say, the mayor asked me to call you?
Yeah.
And what was... how long did your conversation go with the police chief?
It was just a few minutes. He basically... He tried to act like he was concerned and wanted to know my side and really actually ended up cutting me off numerous times and telling me to calm down when I was never excited in the first place. And all he said was, you know, I'll look into it. And I'm not sure if he ever did any kind of formal investigation.
What was the date of the call you had to him, more or less? A week ago, 2 weeks ago?
Maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago.
And have you heard back from him since?
Yeah, probably a week ago I spoke with him.
This is, I mean, a second, the... He called you a second time?
Yeah, he's called me a couple times.
And what was the nature of the second call?
Basically that he feels that the towing was just and that everything that happened should have happened.
And what was your response when you heard this?
Well, I asked him what kind of investigation he did because none of us were included in the investigation.
No one had come and asked you questions or,
nope.
or any of the people in the vehicle?
Nope.
Had they talked to your mom?
Nope.
What did he say when you asked him that question?
Well, he said, I don't remember exactly what he said, but something to the degree that, you know, we did an investigation, we found that the towing, well, you know.
Case
he
closed.
He spoke with officers, and basically he feels that their reason for towing the car was right.
And did you have any further communication with him after this conversation?
No.
So in essence, is it fair to say, I'm wondering, did you wait until you'd gotten this, had this conversation with the police chief before you took the issue back in front of city council? Is that
no, no, because we weren't, I mean, during this whole time, we've been trying to figure out the whole process that you would have to go through to get your money back. Because really, again, there are two issues. One is that we need our money back, and two, that the first part where, you know, obviously the men were stopped because they're men of color.
Did you get your money back? I assume not.
No. That's why, I mean, we didn't feel, you know, we wanted to take other routes before having to, like, go on television humiliating the whole city council, which we never really had a chance to do, but...
Well, then you did go on television, right. vicious scoundrels that you are and troublemakers, and you talked to the city council. What kind of a reaction did you get from the council?
I don't know. Well, most of them, I think, already knew about it. I think all of them already know about it because we talked to, what's the dude's name? Big dude? No.
Oh, Scott Kennedy.
Scott Kennedy.
And what did Kennedy say to you?
He was kind of more or less just like, yeah, we'll probably be able to get you that back.